Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. This is Dark Temp 66. Joe, we still don't have a name for this podcast. We've been trying to figure out a name like multiple times, and I don't know. I guess we tried to call it Nilfs. We love Nilfs, but we felt that maybe, I don't know, a lot of people hate Nilfgaard. So last episode we talked about Master Mirror, the new expansion for Gwent, how we kind of felt the meta was going to go. What are we, a week and 5 days, maybe not even that long into it? So we're going to have a little bit more recap on what we feel probably are the best cards, best factions, which if you're playing Gwent, we could probably already have that answer for you. We have a couple new people on the podcast as well. Our focus is not only going to be around up-and-coming streamers, pro streamers, but also followers, people that hang out in our channel. So there'll be a rotation, but there'll also be some solid concrete members that don't rotate as much, but... Yeah, so I'll let the first two people introduce themselves. You guys take it away, and we'll start talking.
Yeah, I can go first. So this is Avid. So I've been playing Gwent since March. It took me about a month playing Gwent, and I hit pro rank. I was pretty addicted. I mean, I still am, but especially that full first month, very addicted to the game. I had only played Monsters my first entire month going in. And then so I'm just starting to build out my stuff and expand to other factions. I'd also had the opportunity to participate in two community tournaments in the beginning of June, the 983 tournament, and the one was a Facebook community tournament. And the Facebook community tournament, I was lucky enough to place in second on that, so that was fun.
Why do you think that Monsters are always like the first faction people play? Because I did the exact same thing. Do you think it's because it's just more accessible to new people to understand how Thrive component works, or what do you think it is?
For me, I think initially starting, the game actually said this is the recommended faction for new players. They kind of lean new players towards Monster, and I don't know if the same was like that for when you started or that they had made any updates to after Android deployment. But for me, it said we recommend this faction for new players. And then I had just tried them out, and I liked them. I liked the variety between Deathwish and Consume, Thrive, Bleeding. I just liked all aspects, so I ended up sticking with it.
Yeah, and in case you guys didn't know, Avaiz is usually always streaming. He's also a pro player, so we're going to put everyone's streaming information in the comment section as well. So if you guys want to listen to the people on the podcast, you're able to. So let's get our next person, our new next person going on. Go for it, bud.
Hey, my name is Jupiter, Jupiter Sakadura in game. I don't really hide my identity because I have been streaming games for a while now. I took a break. I was primarily a Keyforge player, and I had a stream. I had a lot of, I run a team there, stuff like that. Then with the COVID thing happening, I basically took a break from Keyforge because it's more of a paper game than it is an online game. Was introduced to Gwent by Nightcrawler, who's a streamer, and I listened to him for a bit, and because he was jumping in on our Keyforge stream, so I gave Gwent a try. Thanks to All for One and Nightcrawler, which I'm happy they did. I started, I guess, at the very end of April, going into May. So May, I did my grind like Avaiz did, and I went from 30 to pro in 1 month, which is insane amount of grind. But like, it was fun. So I just did that to prove to myself I could go pro. And now, like, I'm working on my master's degree in new media journalism. I will be back to streaming. I will be doing Gwent content in the next 3 months or so. When I finish up my master's, I will be also doing a blog and things like that. So, more to come, I guess, on that. I'm always hanging out here with Dark, and, so you'll hear from me more, like, as I go. I'm also being coached by Freddy Babes, Pajaball, and Red Rame. So I'm looking to hit top 16 at some point.
That'd be pretty crazy. So, yeah, I mean, Freddy Babes has got some – I mean, they all have some really good decks. I've been watching a lot of Freddy Babes decks. They seem to kind of work the best for me. But let's get into it. Master Mirror, guys, spill the beans. What do you think?
I think Master Mirror was a fresh take on a stale meta. Like, I know a lot of the people were really sick of the old meta with the scenarios and stuff, and I think that Master Mirror has done a good job of kind of bringing some fresh life into the game, but I don't know if it necessarily balanced much.
Yeah, I mean, Master Mirror, I agree. It is a fresh take. The meta was around for a while. I think it was people were saying like 6 months with Harmony or Elves being number one. And the fresh take making Skellige so far of an advantage is a bit rough. I mean, I think we were 5 days in and I look and I go and check out Red Rim's channel and he's playing chess and not Gwent. So it's not a good sign when it's 5 days into a new expansion and it's so unbalanced, Skellige having such an advantage that you have these huge streamers playing something else until it's resolved.
Do you really think that the last hot fix fixed Skellige?
No.
Yeah, no.
Okay. Not a chance. But also, a lot of the streamers and stuff aren't playing now, too, because this weekend is the Invitational for Leviathan Gaming, and they don't want to tip decks, and they're not sharing information. That's why you've not seen any updated meta reports.
Oh, okay. Ezra, what are your take on everything? You're being quiet over there like usual.
Hey. Okay. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I feel like Skellige did need its limelight. You know, you guys were saying it's always been strong. But, you know, I am starting to see, like, it's definitely more common now that you're going to run into a Skellige deck the lower you get in the ladder. And I'm starting to see it more where, like, okay, now I have to worry about somebody else playing, you know, GS and daggers on me or Wild Boar. And then finishing it off with a Mork or whatever. I remember I would probably go in like every few games and would not see a Skellige deck. It would be Monster or Nilf. And maybe, you know, Harmony when that was out. And now it's literally Skellige and Monsters. That's all I'm seeing like every game. I could see why, you know, Dark was saying, you know, he's like, I'm getting tired of running into Skellige already. And then a new expansion just started.
Well, yeah, I mean, I made a joke about it that I played 36 games and 40 of them were against Skellige. But I am happy in a little bit of a realm that Nilfgaards are not the scumbag players of the game. It's now Skellige. So that's good for me.
To be fair, though, there's been a lot of pro players that have proven that Skellige is not as strong as like some people are crying about. But the thing is like they only have a couple of counters. Like I know that there's a Nilfgaard deck that is a hard counter to Skellige, and like a lot of the people have shown like, look, I played 20 games and lost 3 games to Skellige. So like I think skill level comes into play with this and like where you're at on the ladder. But the thing that made Skellige so oppressive in this meta was the fact that you can make mistakes with the Skellige deck, like major mistakes in your gameplay, and still win. Like, you could still come back.
Well, I think that's the problem, because you don't have to draw perfect. You can make mistakes, but if you're playing against Skellige, I feel like I have to draw absolutely perfect and play a perfect game. Am I wrong about that?
Possibly. Yeah. But, I think that, like I said, there's certain decks that are hard counters to the engines and stuff that they're trying to build. But, like, again, there's maybe 2 or 3 decks that can pull that off. And, like, you'd have to be on those decks. And then they're probably not great against other decks you'll run into that aren't Skellige. So,
Evades, what are you playing mostly for people who aren't familiar with your channel? What's your big deck right now?
Skellige. So I did, to start the season, I was working on Monsters. Monsters is really what I had started playing, and I'm still primarily doing Monsters as my main faction. And I played it back to pro rank this season. You know, I got to rank 2 just memeing around with ethereal type stuff. And then I'm like, all right, time to put the big boy pants on. Let's do some tryhard games. I swapped to a more realistic monster deck with some frost elements to it, and I went on, played 13 games, and I won 12 of them to get myself back into pro. So Monster is my number one choice, but right now I am doing placements, and I'm doing it with Skellige just while they're strong.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've kind of mixed between, I started off with Monster Frost, and I think that's kind of what got, that's what got me to pro rank this year, and I think it took me like a week, maybe a week and a half. I don't really remember. Was it yesterday? Yeah, I feel like it was like a month ago. But you know, I'm actually messing around a lot with Northern Realms and looking at some of the decks that Freddy Babes was showing off, like with All God, which I think was one of his viewer decks that he doesn't know if it's going to be like pro player type meta, you know, tier one, but it kind of uses all god to get boosts in your hand in your deck quickly. But actually he has a newer deck as well that he was showing off, which is kind of like using the smoke effect, getting as much boost out and then replaying your boost or replaying your ability with a few cards. So I like Northern Realms a lot. I kind of felt like they were going to be the most powerful faction, which I'm completely wrong about right away. But I think he made a good point when he said you have tier zero, which doesn't exist, which is Skellige. You have tier one, which is Northern Realms, and everything else is tier two. And I don't know if that's going to turn out to be the way it is, but I kind of think that's where it's going right now.
I mean, I feel like with the provision nerf, you know, second wind dropping down by three, I mean, basically it just means that you can't run, you know, your typical 3-7 cards, with it being Grimmest or what was the other two? There was, normally you would see Grimmest, Hammond, and maybe, even though Avalok is a 10, you're not going to see those guys anymore just because of, you know, the way weather effects are working now with the new expansion. And then, you know, when Blood Eagle got its provision cost dropped down to 7, it still didn't turn it into a nerfed card. Like, Deathblow is still very easy to get, especially if they throw out anything weak. And Skellige is, is capable of lowering their numbers enough for Deathblow to kick in anyway. So, like, the nerf didn't really do anything to those cards. If anything, it just gave you a more limited options, but it's still very playable with those cards.
Well, I think the thing that puts Skellige over the top in this set is they brought back the veteran mechanic. And I think the veteran mechanic is what makes Skellige have that long game. Because they're already good in the first round. If they win the first round, you almost can't win. Because them going to the third round, all their quality provision plays are now even better. So, like, I think the veteran thing is kind of where they crippled the meta with Skellige. I don't think it was the cards that they nerfed. I think it helps that they nerfed them, but I think the veteran mechanic itself is absolutely absurd.
So speaking of the veteran mechanic, what is the veteran mechanic for people who might not be familiar with it, new to the channel or new to the game?
The veteran mechanic basically states that every turn that you don't play the card, like in round one, if it's a 5, round two, it will be a 6, round three, it will be a 7, basically gets 1 point of power per round that you don't play it. So by round three, all your cards that have veteran on it now are +3 to what they were originally. So, or +2, what is it? Yeah, +2 to what it is originally.
Yeah, and the thing with Skellige too is those veterans, not only is it every round they get stronger, they also get stronger in your graveyard. So you have that replayability to play a card in round one at 5 points, and you can play it on round seven, that same card from your graveyard with Freya's Blessing, with your evolving card Herald, and now it's a 7-point card.
So talking about graveyards, I was getting made fun of by Jupiter in the last game we played, even though I won. Why is no one playing Squirrels?
It's just not it's a niche card, and it's a card that is a tech card, and with the way the meta is right now, I don't think it has a place at this point. And maybe in the future, like in the, when you're playing lists that you can see what your opponent's playing and stuff, but it just seems like a wasted 4 provision spot for most decks.
I think another reason too is it's messing with the devotion mechanic. Mm-hmm. Especially since, you know, a lot of these newer factions are relying on devotion. Skellige is one of them. Monsters is one of them. I'm not sure about Nilfgaard. I know they're using Disloyal and all that, but I'm not sure, like, how that affects it.
What's the big Skellige devotion card?
Herald, for sure. Herald. Okay. Because he transforms every round, and then on round three, he gets to bring back a Bronze Warrior. You get to play it. And then every round that warrior is played, you deal damage by 1. And then I believe if you're running Herkja as well, that's another swing damage that you can do at the end of every turn. So you're basically dealing 2 damage per turn.
Yeah.
You have Veil.
Yeah, that and all the flip cards, like all the 6 power 11 flip guys, they're all devotion based too. So like you figure in Syndicate, they actually have Ulrich who is devotion. Jock is okay, but Ulrich is like the real guy. And then you have like in Scoia'tael, they have their card is good. Like, so they're going to play devotion there because everything is based on symbiosis and stuff. Then you look at Harold, he has devotion. So you're going to want to play devotion with SK for the most part. So like yada yada, like in Northern realms, you have the Vixis is a good card, and there's other things that you want to play devoted to. So the only faction that even has a chance of playing a squirrel without getting hurt is if you're playing like an ethereal based monsters deck, because you know Spies is definitely keeping devotion. So
speaking on Syndicate, have you guys played a lot against the Zealot deck? You think that's going to be a strong deck?
Yeah, I played it once, and it was really strong. It was really strong. Like I said, that one time you played it, you know, on stream a few days ago, that was the only time I've seen it, you know, somebody else playing them. But like I said, I really think that that deck could be something that you could see in pro, just because everybody relied on the coin deck so much, you know. So now you're going to see swarming capabilities from Syndicate, not just high boosted numbers.
I think the one thing with the Fire Sworn deck is it's so vulnerable to a round two push because it I think really relies on a longer round just to get the cards out, get the coins generating, etc. It's really vulnerable, and I think Syndicate also has the lowest win rate since the expansion in the pro rank. And I think just because Fire Sworn isn't as viable as other Syndicate options like Crime. I think crime decks are still more viable than Firesworn.
I think that Syndicate is actually the worst of all the factions at this point. And not just because of win rate, because they don't really have... They have a good mid-game mechanic. Like, they have lots of cool things you can do in the mid-game that seem to put you ahead. But the problem is every other faction closes the game, like, with such a burst that... Like, the best burst that Syndicate has is if you play Gord, and that's, like, their best burst. Like Louisa, like, into Savola is not a thing anymore with the way they handicap the Rose. It still happens, but it's still not great. Like, in the other... All the other factions have a bigger burst, so... Syndicate is just ever since Cash got nerfed down, like they've been on the downward spiral, and I think this is where you're seeing them bottom out. Same with, like, I think them and ST are the two weakest factions easily in this set. I think the pros are going to be playing Nilfgaard, Monsters, SK, and Uprise, like the Northern.
Do you think that the rotation of the discount on kegs will affect what factions people play?
Not in the pro level. In the pro level, they have all their cards. Like, I had all my cards the day it came out because I had like 170 plus kegs of stuff because I don't play arena. I don't waste my runes. I already have 3,135 runes like towards the next set, and it's just gonna grow. So like most pros will have the whole set as soon as it comes out. They don't have to pay. This is a pretty free to play game. That's one of the bonuses of Gwent.
Yeah, so I think that focus is probably around keeping people in the game to make, you know, cards a little bit cheaper, I guess you could say, to get, and maybe getting people to use other factions when they climb the ladder. So, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I think the one exception there is any new players. I'm in, like, the Gwent community group on Facebook, and you see new players post, oh, hey, I'm, you know, grabbing these kegs because it's on sale this week, even though next week there's going to be, you know, one new faction rotated in, one new faction rotated out. They may not be aware of that. But it could impact new players selecting factions, especially if you're not as aware with how friendly Gwent is to free-to-play players.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that the money aspect is always going to be there because you have people like me. You can't go 30 to like rank 1 without paying for some kind of kegs. Like, it'd be almost impossible because of the amount of like time you would lose trying to farm your faction. I'm not going to say it's impossible. I don't know if you did it free, but like, I know when I got in, I was like, I got a bunch of kegs just to get myself a head start into the things. I played Syndicate and Nilfgaard to pro. Like, I was between the two of them. That was during the Cash era, so it was really easy. Like, it wasn't too bad, but it still took a ton of time to grind and like to get that through. So like, I don't know how your trip was, but like, I can't see a free to play person getting like 30 to pro like that easily, but
yeah, I had I actually didn't spend it. Did take me a month. I played it a decent amount though, probably like 3 to 4 hours a day, and I also only stuck with one faction, so I didn't really swap where you had Syndicate and Nilfgaard, so that's two, so your cards and resources were kind of split between two factions, where mine is more devoted to one, so it may have been the difference there. Yeah,
that's true. Like I'm a nerd for learning all six factions, and like even now, like when I went to pro the first month, the last month I didn't even try to go pro, and this month I might as well try to get there again, but like I've been, now that I'm there at pro, I know I'm not getting the top 500 without having a solid base on all the different factions. So I feel I haven't played any Nilfgaard or Syndicate because like those two I know pretty well how they run, and Syndicate's just weak. So like I've been on Monsters for the first part of this month, and I'm probably getting ready to switch over, and I'm going to start learning the Northern Realms. And each of my coaches, basically, I'm going to have them teach me like the factions I think they're strongest in. So it's like it's a tough game, because like getting pro is pretty easy, but getting to pro, like real pro level, like where you're in the top 500, that's going to be a heck of a grind, I think.
Yeah, I think it, like, we're talking about like investment. I think, you know, I played open beta or closed beta, whatever it was, and I probably spent about $40 to get to pro, but I think you're kind of right. I think grinding to pro level is, I think it's a big deal for sure. I'm not going to say it's not, but once you realize that you have to make 500 to not be kicked out of pro and have to do it over again the next season, I think it's pretty daunting. And you have to play multiple factions. You have to kind of go outside of your comfort zone. You can't play one faction. And I think what's interesting too is what worked climbing the ladder might not be the meta in pro. So that's another interesting thing too.
I think that one of the biggest things that people don't realize too, when they're reading meta reports and reading all these pros and what their decks are and what they're playing at their deck level, is that most of the time when these pros go into tournaments, they have deck lists and they can basically see what they're playing against. So the game is much more like chess, and not, there's no surprise factor to the pro level game. Like it's basically, I get to see your list, I get to play, and I get to plan how I want to play against your list. I know exactly where I need to go. I know when I can be aggressive. I know when I need to be careful. So like, it's a lot different, I think, for like people coming into the game too, when they see these lists and they go, oh, they said that this list is amazing. Look at Saber's Ethereal Monster Haunt list. Like this thing is crazy good. And then you play it and you go, man, this isn't really that great. Like, I don't get it. Like, I don't get like how he can win so much with it and stuff like that. I was like, a lot of it is because pros only play quality cards. They don't play memes. They don't play, you know, trick stuff. They basically are there to basically win. So they're playing the deck lists to the best of their abilities. They're all talking because they're all on teams and they're all playing with other high level people. So all the people that are in the top, say 50, like for you to crack into top 50, you have to be on your shit, because, sorry, I don't know if we're supposed to be cursing on your streams. No, you're good. but like if you're not on your game and you're not basically pushing and pushing and pushing, like you're just never going to get there, because these guys are doing this like on the regular every month, and they've been doing it since beta. So like, you can have zero off days to get to the very top. Like, it's going to be really hard, I think.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think the surprise factor in terms of tournament talk is definitely a thing. You know, you look at decks like Monster Kiki Queen. You would almost never see that in a tournament setting, because if you see that in a tournament setting and your opponent says, okay, I'm playing this, I have to win round one, I have to commit all resources to win round one, and then I have to bleed them round two hard, so they have a really short round three and don't get the benefit of Kiki Queen. That's why, you know, you saw vampires as monsters kind of go to choice for last season's tournaments, because it was more so about consistency rather than any sort of surprise factor. And that is what we see oftentimes in tournaments, those consistently good decks.
There's a reason why Bomb Heaver and certain tech cards were just all stars for the pros, because they know they're going to see ball. They knew they were going to see scenarios. Like there's like multiple scenarios, and scenarios are still going to be prevalent. You're still going to see them this weekend at the Invitational. Guarantee you, there's still going to be like ball will still be there. You'll see some haunt, I'm sure. I don't know so much about seeing I'm guessing somebody could get tricky with like SK and still try to bust out the scenario deck, but I'm guessing SK is going to be all warrior. So, and I'm guessing SK is going to get banned all weekend as well. That's my prediction.
Yeah. Yeah. So, the bans will be, I think, 100% SK. And I think everyone will also bring SK.
So we talked about Master Mirror, what we've kind of talked about with the podcast, what we're trying to focus on besides highlighting people in the community, but is also making the game really accessible for people. You know, that might prefer a podcast. I know there's a lot of different podcasts out there, but we try to be a little bit different. If you guys had a couple pieces of advice for someone that might be new to the game, what kind of pieces of advice would you give to them?
I guess my piece of advice would be, depending on what your goals are, if you're in the game to get good, like to basically, you know, consistently get better, pick a faction, play the faction till you get to pro, kind of like what Evades did. I think picking one faction and just learning it inside out, that's great. When you hit pro, don't feel the urge to have to stay pro like the next month or two, because you're not going to climb pro rank until you are proficient in four factions. Like, you cannot climb rank. So like, at the next couple of months, just look and focus on like the next house that you want to play, kind of like what I'm trying to do now. It's like, I just go and I play everything. Like, don't just assume cards are bad because people say they're bad. Play them and see. The pros do have weight, like I said, but their weight is based on playing each other. Remember that. Like, so there are things that will get you up the ladder and get you up the ranks that people are going to give you crap about. Like, I've noticed in the community, like, when you play cards that are kind of outside the comfort zone, but they feel good, like, everybody has those kind of cards, right? It's cards that, like, you like to play, but they're not necessarily cards anybody else would. Like, I like the Spala card. Like, it's a neutral card that moves a thing in my Ethereal deck. Not a lot of people like Spala. I can't remember what they're called, but you get them from Thronebreaker, but something of Spala. But
yeah, it's Strays of Spala.
Yeah, Strays of Spala. I love that card for my Ethereal deck, but probably not something a pro would ever put into their deck. Like, so it's one of those things like where you need to be creative and learn how things work and why they're good and why they're bad and what works when and stuff like that. So there's a very large learning curve. Easy to play, hard to master, I think. So that's my input. I'll shut up.
Yeah, and I think we did actually in the last open, we did see some people using Strays. And we can see them use offensively and defensively, especially where we saw any monster users playing vampires. And then we did see some Nilfgaard users playing Stefan and Damien. You know, it definitely has its applications there. And, you know, if you're a Nilfgaard user and you're using Stefan or Damien and your card gets removed, you play Strays and you can move it right back. So that's pretty huge. But my advice to new players, I do agree with Jupiter. Learn your deck inside and out. But mainly when you're learning your deck, also focus on who you're playing against and what your deck strengths and weaknesses are compared to your opponents to get better. And then just you understand that and get a better idea of that the more that you play the game. And then you start to realize, okay, what could they have left in their deck versus what they have played or based on what they have played.
Ezra, what do you say, bud? Is he still with us?
Yeah, I'm here. I was like, you cut out right there. But anyway, so I mean, my advice would be not only just learn your deck, but also to fully learn what your opponent is playing. Like, the moment you see that faction pop up, assume, okay, they're going to run this card or this set of cards. And, you know, get to the point to where when that card is played, you already know what's going to happen, what they're going to go for, or at least try to predict what they're going to go for, and play off of that. Like, at least come up with a plan as it's happening so you know how to counter it, in a sense. So that way you're not just there like, okay, what just happened? What do I do? I'm just there fumbling, trying to figure out what cards to play next. I mean, sometimes that does still happen, you know, it just catches you off guard, you know, what cards kind of come out of their hand. But the point is, learn your cards, learn their cards, and try to come up with as many type of potential plays or possibilities that are going to come out of those cards.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think all your points are all kind of spot on. Adding to it, I mean, I think I would have to say understand one of the things a lot of people don't pay attention to, which I mean, I think it's going to take a long time to master, is understanding how to play a blue on red coin, understanding card advantage, understanding point spreads, when you need to be up, when you can be down, what that comfort level is in the point spread and what deck you're playing. You know, how are you going to be able to meet that point spread? Was a big thing to me. And I think number two is find somebody who plays the game that you can kind of latch on to, whether it be a pro level Twitch streamer, which might not be the best for you. You might want to be looking more for like the lower channel streamers, people who kind of explain their cards as they play. Now, pro players usually have great videos where they talk through their decks, they talk through their cards, which is a great way to go too, but I think a lot of the times talking to a streamer or someone to play with that helps. I know when I started playing Gwent, Jupiter helped me a ton, and I think I'm passionate about the game because of him, because I think if there wasn't people like him or the community wasn't strong like it is, I think a lot of people get lost in it because they get lost by all of the cards. And Gwent can be such a frustrating game. I mean, because you're like, how do they have all these cards that meet mine? But it's just understanding, you know, what they're playing, what they're gonna play, and why they played it, and that helps. And when you have someone in your corner, it definitely helps you understand it. So, with that being said, final thoughts, guys. Just give me something. Just, I don't know.
Follow the sun.
Just nothing. No
I
follow
agree with what
sun.
you said, though. I think checking out streamers to learn,
Yes.
huge, huge, huge. And it's an opportunity where you can interact and ask questions to really learn and then see how different people are playing things that you maybe didn't even know existed in terms of a certain interaction.
Ghost
So, yeah.
Galaga.
Play
I'm
Skellige. I knew you were
kidding.
gonna say that. I mean, I was like
I'm kidding.
Nilfgaard.
I'm
People just give
kidding.
me shit all the time. I just have people come in the stream and like, oh, you're playing Nilfgaard again. You're playing Masquerade Ball again.
Just follow the sun.
Just follow the sun. Exactly. So guys, that is our episode. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. Like I said in the comment section, I will post the information of where you can find the streamers. They also will have their schedules and things like that. And we'll also post information about when you can expect the next episode, how you can give to the channel, and of course, how you can also be a part of the podcast. And always, always, always make sure that you're checking out these other streamers because they have just as fantastic, if not better, content than mine. So, guys, all have a wonderful night and thank you so much.